Welcome back to Always Hold On to Smallville. I'm Zach. This week we're talking about Hothead, the third episode of Smallville's first season, and I'm happy to be joined by my friend Nick. What's up, Nick?
Hey, Zach. Not much. How are you?
Good. Now, Nick is responsible for our artwork, so thank you, Nick.
Oh, no problem. I'm glad to do it. I'm excited for everything.
So Nick is a couple years younger than me, and we went to high school together. And between classes, you know, there used to be a group of us that went from one class to another. And, you know, you walk and talk with people. I think this time of day, me and Lance and, you know, some of our other friends who may or may not appear on the podcast at some point, we're walking to, I believe it was the band hall. And but you used to meet up with us, like, in the hallway. And what you used to say was, "Hey, did you guys see the Fresh episode last night?" I was like, Nick. Do not buy into the WB advertising propaganda and call it the Fresh episode. It was just the most absurd thing. It's so funny. Like, I've never heard a real life person refer to it as the Fresh episode before. So that's a little background with me and Nick in Smallville. So Nick, when did you see your first Fresh episode of Smallville?
Hey, don't make fun of the Fresh episode. You know, I'm like the general audience guy. So everything that I like is because it's directed toward me. So my first episode, I think I remember catching it on TV once. I forget which episode was the first one, but I do remember after the episode aired the next day, I would see who had the VHS in the morning so I could borrow it and watch it.
So we're in the cafeteria or the gym? Like,
this was in the morning in the band hall.
All right. So you would track down who had it recorded off TV and you borrow their tape.
Yes.
Interesting.
Yes.
See, kids, this is before the age of iTunes and streaming and internet torrents. This is old school analog video being passed around by people.
I think actually I only started watching it because you guys told me to start watching it and you started me off on the first episode.
All right. So did I not borrow a tape from you for season 4? Because I stopped watching Smallville pushed me over the edge twice and I stopped watching it for a while. And one was the prom episode in season 4 called Spirit. I was just so over the whole Clark and Lana thing because he asked Lana to prom, and it just made me so mad. Like, Chloe's there. She needs a date. Lana's dating Jason, the Winchester brother, the older one. Supernatural. Jason Teague, right? And yet he goes to prom with Lana, and it just made me so mad. Well, actually, he goes to prom with Lois, but that's his own story. Anyway, I was like, screw this show. So I stopped watching for a while. There were 4 or 5 episodes at the end of season 4 that I never saw live on TV. I didn't see until I bought the DVD set. But I wanted to see the season finale because obviously that was when he graduated from high school, and it was 90-minute special because they had footage of Batman Begins, like an extra 5-minute preview of Batman Begins in the commercials and stuff. And I borrowed that VHS from someone, and I'm pretty sure it was you.
It might have been me, but I think I borrowed the video for somebody else.
So this is secondhand
video.
And no, I don't even know if I ever gave it back.
I don't think so. Back then, it was just like with video games. You borrow a game, you never get it back.
And if you're wondering, the other time that I stopped watching was at the end of season 8. Now, you were watching Smallville then in season 8, right?
Oh, I think I stopped after high school, so
you basically watched Smallville for like 2 years.
Hey, no, it was more like three or four, and then I would watch here and then, like, whenever I saw it on TV, I would always try to look up what's going on. But after that, I think because after you guys graduated, I had no one else to impress anymore. I did my own thing. No.
Yeah, became your own man. At the end of season 8, they basically botched the whole Doomsday story, which had actually been much better than I expected it to be at the time. And Clark just, like, they do like a Field of Dreams slow motion thing where he just walks off and he disappears. And it made no sense. And I was just so frustrated with the show at that point. Because season 7 was questionable, and Lex and Lana had left. I mean, Lana leaving is great, but then, of course, she came back and derailed the whole season. The first half of season 8 is great, but then Lana comes back, derails everything. She gets superpowers, et cetera, et cetera. There's no Michael Rosenbaum. Lex Luthor character plays a factor, but Michael Rosenbaum is not involved. They split Doomsday into 2. There's supposed to be like a Doomsday-Clark fight, but it's not much of a fight. And I guess your argument could be, well, he's not Superman yet, so of course Doomsday should just own him. But at least show something. He threw like one punch and got blocked, and he got beat up. It's like, what is it, Superman Returns? Come on. Anyway, it was just very disappointing. And so Lance and I both, we used to get together and watch him every week. We just did not watch the first half of season 9. Like, it was just like, forget it. And then over, like, winter break, if you call that, because we're adults at this point, because we graduated from college. So whatever you want to call winter break, the winter hiatus of Smallville, we got together one day and watched the first half of season 9 all together in one day. It was awesome. Season 9 is probably my second or third favorite season of Smallville. It's really good. But anyway, enough about me, Nick. I'm not supposed to be asking you about yourself. So are you a DC or a Marvel guy? Or where do you stand as far as comic book characters go, superheroes, all that good stuff?
Superheroes, I have to go with DC. I grew up on Justice League. I grew up on Smallville. And Marvel, I fell into the whole hype when the Marvel movies started coming out. But recently, with all the new DC TV shows coming out, I've been really riding that DC train.
Having seen Smallville back in the day and revisiting it now for this podcast, did that change your perception of the show, or at least this episode in any way?
Actually, I think it's actually quite impressive. When I was rewatching the episode and watching the episodes beforehand too, I was just like, I don't remember it being this good. Granted, the graphics, I think I might be playing to the side where it's like, well, because it's an older show, I'll let that slide. Or because it's still the third episode, I'll let this acting slide. But I actually thoroughly enjoyed this episode. I really did like this episode.
Well, let's get into it.
We have a reporting structure. Just because you're my son, don't expect any special treatment.
Believe me, I never have.
That wounded pride routine may have worked for your mother, but don't try it with me. You know perfectly well how I feel about you.
Hence, I'm at a craft factory in Smallville.
Lex, did you know the Caesars would send their sons to the furthermost corners of the Empire so they could get an appreciation of how the world works?
Whatever helps you sleep at night, Dad.
Hothead is the third episode of Smallville's first season. It premiered on October 30th, 2001. It was written by Greg Walker and directed by Greg Beeman. So we open up and the Smallville Crows are playing a football game. There's a lot of rain going on, so it's very atmospheric. And I thought the rain helped, one, to like create atmosphere for the game, and then also to hide the fact there's probably no extras in the stands. I did make note that there was some odd use of slow motion throughout this episode. We see it later on, and we also see here in the opening a panning shot of the crowd, and it's like not the slow motion where they shoot it at high shutter speed and you slow it down and you see it move like fluidly. It's like, oh, this footage was not meant to be slowed down, but we're slowing it down anyway. And you kind of see the frame skip and all that. Did you know what I'm talking about?
Yes, I did notice.
So I don't know why they chose to do that. It's like, was this episode running short? They need to extend things a few seconds? I don't know, but
it's the third episode. They want to make it all cool and then,
well, like down. You said, they're still figuring things out. You know, it's, yeah, the third episode. So they're hit and miss and they're trying stuff out. But anyway, we're introduced to Coach Walt, who is the coach of high school, He's the coach of Smallville's high school football team. And he's played by Dan Lauria. And anyone who's ever seen The Wonder Years will immediately recognize this guy.
What would you do if I sang out of tune?
Yeah, you are singing out of tune.
Was the point. Oh, come on.
So The Wonder Years, I think it was a little before each of our time, Nick. You know, it was like early 90s, late 80s. I know of The Wonder Years, but I didn't like watch every episode or anything. Are you a big Wonder Years fan?
I caught a couple episodes. I'm a fan.
So you know about as much about that as you do, yeah, about Smallville, apparently.
Yes. Well, I know a little bit more of Smallville than I do of Wonder Years, because Wonder Years, it was a great show. It was just fun to watch. It was a family show, so I enjoy it. It reminds me of there's a TV show out called Goldbergs right now, and I'm thinking about it. I think they parallel a little bit.
It's like a period piece TV show. Mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. And also, it kind of reminds me of How I Met Your Mother, because there's like an older narrator guy throughout the whole
series.
So I wonder if they got inspired by that as well. Mm. But anyway, Coach Walt is like your really hardcore, win-at-all-cost football coach. And he's like pulling Whitney on the side. He's like, what does my jacket say? He says, Coach, you'll follow what I say. And Whitney does follow what he says, and they score a touchdown. They win the game. So I love how when they go in the locker room, they're all like, we have another team that will be eating crow tonight, Coach. Gentlemen.
Yeah.
It's just funny. And this is really, if you think about it, the only time we see Whitney doing what he does on the football field. And you think for a main character, we'd see more of that. But hey, football season is only, you know, the first half of the school year, right? And Smallville started in October. And if you do the math, there's not much else to see. So it was nice to at least see that. And, you know, according to Eric Johnson, Whitney was actually supposed to play a bigger role in this episode than he did. He kind of disappears about halfway through the episode. He doesn't really play much of a part in it.
Oh,
and
yeah.
He was originally supposed to be the kid that Coach Walt threatens, burns his arm and all that stuff.
Oh.
So that would have given him more to do. But then he said, well, maybe they thought they were beating Whitney up in almost every episode. Because if you're, you know, he got beat up in Metamorphosis. He gets beat up a few more times in early season one. So I'm glad that was a different character. And there's something interesting about that actor who played that character. And we'll get to that later. But I think it was good world building to show, like, look, we have more than four people to go to the school. to relax after the win, Coach Walt goes into his sauna. I love how there's a sign.
Yeah, I saw that. I was like, do all coaches have a sauna? Is this like?
Well, did you not read the sign? It's in appreciation of his 25-year service, Nate. So,
yeah, but seriously.
But that was good exposition, though. I know it was ridiculous to have that sign there, but if you think about it from a storytelling perspective, it was good exposition. They established that, hey, he'd been there for 25 years, and B, it was his private sauna. So he's the only guy that uses this. So that would make sense why he's the one that gets the hothead powers, as we'll call them, because he's in his sauna and we CGI. We do this is big. This is like CSI style, like CGI inside what you're seeing, you know, early 2000s technique. And we zoom on in past the sauna and we see meteor rocks at the bottom of the sauna. So that's what's, you know, I don't know what the implication was. I guess this was new. This was a new sauna because he'd been there for 25 years.
Right.
So had those meteor rocks been in there the whole time and he was just soaking them up? Or, I mean, is that how saunas work? Do they replace the stones? I don't know.
Well, it could be just a replacement stones, but where did he get the stones? Like, he just happened to, I'm just going to go to the backyard and grab these stones.
Well, that's the deal with small, but there's meteor rocks everywhere.
Wherever he got these stones, do you think there could be other stones that could have been...
Yeah, I think they were just mixed in with other stones that they collected for it. So maybe I don't know the mechanics of a sauna, so I couldn't really tell you exactly what that's all about. You know, the principal comes in, Principal Kwan, and this is actually the first time we've seen Principal Kwan. His scenes were deleted in the pilot. He actually was part of the scene where the Scarecrow breaks into the trophy case and steals that picture. He's in that scene. I posted the scene on our social media, but they edited around him so you don't see him. So it's kind of funny how easy it was. He's played by Hiro Kanagawa, and he is a genre actor. He shows up on a lot of things. He actually appeared on the latest X-Files.
Yes, he looked very familiar when I saw him.
So. Yeah, he was in the season premiere of the new X-Files. So he's just a character actor. He appears a lot, and he's in quite a few episodes in Smallville's first season. And they have a good conversation there about academics. Academics. Is that a thing? Athletics and academics. Because the reason Principal Kwan comes in there to talk to Coach Walt is several of his players have been caught cheating on a math exam, I believe it is. And, you know, they can't play in the next game. And the coach is like, well, you know, we can just overlook that. You know, next week's a big game. He's like, no, this is important. And Principal Kwan is new, so he doesn't understand, like, a legacy or whatever. And he's like, I've coached here for 25 years, and gives him the whole that spiel. And I like what Principal Kwan says. He says, just because you win doesn't mean you're right. You know, and that's a good message for kids to see. You know, and like I said, good family television with good messages here.
And this theme, like, I don't know how prevalent really it is in especially, like, Southern schools, like, with football and everything. But I think there's a lot of people who could relate to that, I guess.
And, I mean, you remember when we were in marching band, right? It's like, if we're out at some game that goes to, like, midnight, you guys better be at school the next day. And we were. But you know the football team wasn't coming to school. And that, you know, so that's just how it is. Well,
I do remember I had a seventh period, like, pre-calculus class. And they weren't allowed to schedule exams on game nights. Because they had to leave early to get ready for the game. So I actually do remember one of my exams being rescheduled because she had happened to put it on a seventh period exam when there was a football game. So yeah, it definitely does get a little bit favoritism.
Exactly. Preferential treatment. You know, but like it or not, you know, especially in college, right? The national prestige any school gets directly correlates to their success in athletics, and that's just how it is. It's how America works, right? So we love our sports. So then Coach Kwan leaves, and Coach Walt, like, he has like a temper tantrum. He's a literal hothead.
Oh, is that why it's called hothead?
Did you just realize this? No, you know, with you, Mr. Fresh Episode, I wouldn't be surprised. But yes, it's implied his meteor of power has come from the sun. It's all like connected somehow with like, okay, he has a temper, and he got these powers from kryptonite in a sauna. So some combination of all those things has given him some basic telekinetic power where he can start fires. It's basically like Carrie. From the movie Carrie.
But saunas don't really have like actual flames or anything.
Well, this is like... why this particular power, I call BS on this power. That's probably the weakest part of this whole episode, is just the whole mechanics of him getting this power. There's no physical like A to B. You know, like in the last episode, Metamorphosis, the bug boy, when he was bit by bugs who had been infected with kryptonite. So I'm like, okay, I can buy that. There's some pseudoscience there I can follow. And even in the first episode with the Scarecrow, I mean, he was out in the field when the meteor strike happened. So we're like, okay, maybe there was some catalyst there and some energy release. You know, who knows, right? The same stuff that made Lex Ball gave this guy some kind of electric thing. But Coach Walt, I mean, there's no real catalyst or anything here. So it's shaky ground. It's shaky ground.
He could have used steam as his power. I would have bought that if that was his power, but not fire.
Well, yeah, it's just a weird catalyst to get the story where they need to get it. But anyway, we go to the opening credits. Somebody save me. All that. Yeah, we've been through that.
So nostalgic.
So we come back. Chloe is bragging to Pete and Clark about her expose she wrote about the football team.
Well, was high school newspapers really that intense?
That's exactly what I was going to say. As someone who was in high school newspaper, this would never be published, right?
Okay, we couldn't I was wondering.
You couldn't even print like a slightly negative slant on like the results of a game, right? It's like, well, let's only print the winning scores. It's like, are you serious? First of all, these come out when I was in school, every 6 weeks, which is when our grading periods were. So that was the frequency of the release of the paper. Chloe is acting like, oh yeah, this is going to be on the front page of Tomorrow's Torch. I'm like, what are you talking about, Chloe? Like,
how often do you have this?
This small town newspaper. But it's a trope of the concept of the show, right? She's the Lois Lane stand in. So she has to be doing the digging, the reporting, the snooping, the publishing. Look, I mean, as far as I can tell, she's the only person on staff at the Smallville Torch. I guess Clark kind of works there, but I mean, who's
the investigator?
Who is publishing this stuff? Like, there's all these computers. Why? No one's in there. Like, she's the only one doing anything in there at all times. Really, over the course of the entire series, I think we meet maybe three or four other people who maybe worked on the Torch, and they all turn out to be freaks of the week. So, no one is writing exposés and midnight editions and all this stuff. So, Chloe's mouthing off about, you know, aha, the football team, look at these losers. Hey, Pete, get a picture of these losers. I'm like, what? Way to poke the bear, Chloe. I love the casual use of Clark's powers here. Again, this is something that they really did very well in the early episodes. So, one of the team members sees Chloe, like, taking their picture and talking trash about him. So, he throws a ball, like, right at her face. And Clark just reaches in and grabs it right before it hits her. And he throws it back at the guy, and it kind of hits him like, wow, that was really hard. Yeah. I love Pete's reaction to this, too. He's like, oh, nice catch.
Yeah. And then she's like, someone just tried to kill me. And you're just saying, nice catch. That camera, though, I don't remember seeing those cameras back then.
That was way oversized, right? Even in 2001 for a digital camera, that was like three times the size.
It's the budget for the TV show.
Hey, it's small town Kansas, right? They can't afford
that's
stuff.
That's true.
Listen, Nick, they're having to pay to publish a daily high school newspaper. They cannot afford state-of-the-art cameras. Imagine the printing costs and the circulation size. Anyway, so this is a little funny moment there, but it also serves to have Coach Walt notice Clark. So he comes over to Clark and Pete, corners him in the hallway, and he's like, hey, why aren't you on the team? And he says, my dad, he needs me on the farm. And I love he says, but your school needs you on the field. such a coach moment. We got a big game on Friday. Such a coach moment. And he tries to win him over. It's like, look, your dad played, and it's in your genes, kid. Clark says, actually, I'm adopted.
That's the way he said it's so smug. It's like, well, I'm actually adopted. It's like,
ah, God.
And then he gets mad.
Let's do some math here, though. He coached Jonathan Kent.
Okay, yes. So I did want to bring that up. 25 years. He coached for 25 years. And then Pete says, he coached my dad. He coached my brother. He coached so many people. And he also coached Jonathan Kent. So I forget. How old is he doesn't look old. He doesn't look old at all.
there's some massive continuity problems here. Okay, so what would the math be? Let's say Jonathan was 18 25 years ago. Mm-hmm. So what's 18 plus 25?
That is 43.
Really? Wow. So so that means Jonathan is 43, right? That's, first of all, that's just wrong. But, okay, what's 2001 minus 43?
That is 1958.
1958. So exactly. According to this episode, Jonathan Kent must have been born in 1958 to have been 18 25 years ago. And that means he's a senior in Coach Walt's first year coaching Smallville High School. Is that correct?
Right, right.
Okay. So two things that may have a problem here. First of all, in the 1961 episode of Smallville, it's actually called Relic, but everyone calls it 1961 because that's the way it was promoted. You remember this one, right? Where they flash back and it's Jor-El on Earth in the 60s.
Oh, right. Yes. Yes.
So
yes.
Jor-El finds the Kent farm and meets Jonathan's parents. Jonathan's mother is pregnant with him at the time. So that means he was born 1961, 1962. Also, when Jonathan Kent dies, we see his tombstone a few times. The tombstone on it says 1954. Another incorrect date. So I have no idea what they were doing here. Coach Walt should have been there for like 40 years or something, not 25. That's the main problem.
Granted, this is the third. They probably weren't sure how far they were going to go and how far they were going to have to backtrack things.
Well, it's just simple math where it's like, oh, he's clearly older than 43. Well, actually, John Schneider's a youthful guy.
Yeah, so, he does look pretty young.
He could totally go for 43. But you're telling me he was like 30 when they found Clark? I don't know about that. Because, gosh, I'm 28. but they should have just done the math a little better, basically, and then stuck to the continuity. Moving on, because we spent way too much time on that tangent. Clark, basically, he gets peer pressured into joining the team. He calls Whitney over. He's like, hey, Foreman, how do you think Kit do on the field? And, of course, Lana's there, and Clark's trying to impress her. He's like, yeah, I'll be there. And he kind of gives him this typical coach pep talk. He's like, you know, there comes a time where you got to step out of your father's shadow and be your own man. And then later on when Jonathan and Clark are talking about it, and Clark's like, I had to join the team. Daddy didn't give me a choice. He's like, well, let me guess. He gave you the be your own man speech. So he knows exactly what he's going for there. And these are great conversations to have, I think. You know, young Superman, he's in high school. Can he join the football team?
It's a great example of what high school people were going through. And like, it's like asking your parents for permission. Or it's like, okay, now everyone thinks I should do it. Why don't you want me to do it? And then the whole conversation about having to live through me, like with my success. And
yeah, he says, I don't need to live vicariously through your achievements, which is what every like sports dad does with their son. Like, my kid's going to go pro because I couldn't.
Right. Yeah, it's great. It touches on really good high school topics.
And this scene is also a callback to Superman the movie where Clark and his dad have that conversation. And Clark says, man, I could score every single time if I played football. And Jonathan tells him, look, there's one thing I do know, and that is you are here for a reason. And it's not to score touchdowns. And Jonathan Kent here in Smallville, he says, look, you were meant for much more important things than winning football games. And it's the same theme, you know, and it's exactly what it's true. It's like just because you have superpowers doesn't mean, you know, go be successful, go make a lot of money. You have a higher calling than that. And that is what Superman not using his powers is all about.
With great power comes great responsibility.
Yeah, that it's
wrong universe, but it's a good point.
So Lex Luthor is also in this episode.
Yeah, I was like, oh, when is Lex going to show?
There's a subplot here, and all the themes of this episode really work together well, which is why I much like you, I liked this episode a lot more than I thought it would. Like, I think back on it, and I'm like, oh, yeah, that's only like the pyrotechnic football coach. That was whatever. Yeah. But we have Clark here. He's defying his father, joining the football team. We have Lex here, who's defying his father because Lionel has sent his drones, as Lex calls them, to tell him he has to lay off like half his workers at the Luthor Corp plant, or 20%, is it? Yeah. And we actually meet Dominique Senatori, who is a recurring character in a few episodes of the early seasons of Smallville. He's kind of Lionel's right-hand man. He's like one of those guys who really wishes he was Lionel's son and doesn't like Lex because he feels like he could be so much of a better son to Lionel than Lex is. Mm-hmm. And Lex knows this because he can read people like nobody's business, and he really enjoys tormenting him. And he's like, hey, Dominique, tell your sister I said hi. So you know there's a lot going on there. But he's played by Jason Connery, and he's in actually three episodes of Smallville. I wish they would have kept his character around longer, Because that's an interesting dynamic, yet another interesting dynamic between the Luthers, having all these other guys work around them and want to be part of their world. But Lex says, no, I'm not going to cut my workers. In fact, I'm going to hire 20% more workers. So that establishes Lex's plot for the whole episode. And then Lana, who has found out that the football team is cheaters, and she's like, man, why do we even do this? Cheerleading's fun, I guess, but there's more to life than this. And she's having her own kind of mid-teenage crisis. It's not...
She's trying to figure out what she wants to do, and go her for even caring about the fact that the team was cheating, and because of that, she's going to quit because she doesn't want to cheer cheaters. And I actually think that was pretty good for her.
Yeah, it shows some agency for her. In later seasons, these things didn't really all tie together as well as they do here, because Clark, Lex, and Lana are the main three of Smallville, at least in the early seasons. So when they each have their own journey through an episode and they all mirror each other, that really adds to the strength of the episode, like its narrative, like what it's trying to say, and that goes across the whole story, and that's great. Even in a goofy story with a pyrotechnic football coach, the pyrotechnic powers. But unfortunately for Clark, this means she's no longer on the cheerleading squad because she's quit.
Oh man!
So he shows up to practice, and he's like looking around, and he's like, "Hey, Pete, you seen Lana?"
way to be obvious. It's like we all know what you were looking for.
Yeah, and Jonathan is here to watch the practice. It looks like a lot of people are. Do people go watch high school football practice? Is it maybe just it's a small town? So maybe that's what they do. There's something else to do. Like, oh, man, the Crows are practicing today at 4, man. We got to go out to the field. What did you think about parents coming watching high school football?
Yeah, I think my parents only came once just watch us march in band. But
in a game, not just practice.
Yeah, well, yeah, exactly. Just at practice. I don't know. That's. I guess they really want to cheer on their kids. I guess there could have been parents that are – football practices, but we never really went to those.
All those parents living vicariously through their kids. That's who's at the practice. Yeah.
Yes.
So Clark, you know, he gets tackled a few times. He's obviously not trying at all because he doesn't want to get hurt or anything, or get anyone else hurt. He can't be hurt. That's the problem.
Yeah.
And Jonathan's watching him really intently, and he keeps looking back over to Jonathan. Coach Walt pulls over. He's like, "Look, I'm coaching this team, not your dad. So do what I say." You know. So in the next play, Clark does what he does. He like breaks all these tackles and jumps over these people, kind of dangerously showing off superpowers
No one was like, "The hell is this guy?"
Well, they were videotaping, and we'll get to that in a second, which is interesting. But you know, he scores his touchdown, he slams the football down, he's all excited, and it's a great moment where Jonathan just gets up, walks out, and that says everything that needs to be said, but without any words. Of course, it defeats the whole purpose of him even being there, as he said, to make sure no one else gets hurt. Yeah. Like, the minute Clark starts using his powers and could potentially hurt people, he leaves. But that aside, it was a powerful moment between father and son there. And to your point about people watching Clark using his powers, we cut to later that evening, and Coach Walt is reviewing the tape from practice. Right. And he's, like, rewinding and watching Clark do the crazy jump. And I thought that was an interesting point. Like, hey, people are watching this, dude. You shouldn't be doing this stuff. Fortunately, he has another temper tantrum and destroys all the tape in the so there's no evidence of it anymore, but I'm glad they at least touched on that, because like you, I was like, hey, that's a public display of powers you should not be doing, Clark.
When he destroys the tape, like, that's where the principal is there, right?
Right, so Quan comes back and tells him, oh, coach, one of the players has come forward, and apparently you're the one that supplied the answers to the test. Like, is this work this way? Do football coaches have the answer to math tests to be distributed?
Well, if the teacher doing the math test was one of his teammates, one of his kids. Yeah. He probably was like, hey, remember the time I let you run quarterback? Yeah, give me, I don't know. You owe me.
Quan, he'd gone to the school board, and of course, Coach Walt says, well, yeah, I've coached half of them. So Quan really can't get Walt in trouble with only one student. But if he gets all the students to step forward, they have to do something about it. So that's his plan now. He shouldn't have told the coach anything.
Yeah, I was going to say, why would you do that?
It's like monologuing, but for the hero instead of the villain, right? Well, here's what I'm going to do, James Bond. So Quan goes out to his car, and Coach Walt, hey, he has another tantrum, like we said.
Before we get there, though, he catches the taste of fire, and Quan is just like, the hell's going on here, coach? If there's a fire in your school, and you just walk away.
Well, I better get back to the school board. Yeah. That is true. Like,
it's,
man,
your problem, not mine.
That was quite an underreaction to a fire spontaneously breaking out in your school. That's a good point.
I laughed when it happens. Like, is that it? Is that
the hell is going on here, coach? Hashtag unimpressed Quan. So he goes out to the parking lot, and Coach Walt is finally kind of figuring out how his powers work at this point. So he focuses real hard on Quan's car, and it catches on fire. And luckily, Clark and Pete are in the shower at like 8 o'clock at night. Like,
yeah, how long are their practices?
Man, I thought marching practice was bad. So they see what's going on in the parking lot. So Clark says, "Pete, go get help." So Pete runs off. So Clark can use his
powers.
Run
away so I can save him.
So Clark, he rips the door off the car and throws it like 30 feet. Like, he saves Principal Kwan, but had the car not blown up right after that, that would have been very suspicious. Like, he needs to learn how to subtly use his powers and save people.
Well, he's still getting used to it, so.
Well, and this is the third episode in a row where he saves someone from a car accident.
True.
Lex, Whitney, and now Principal Kwan.
Whoever's selling cars over there is making a lot of money.
Yes. Yeah, no more Kent truck accidents yet, but they are coming. I promise you, folks, they're coming.
Well, I'm a little bit confused because he's locked inside his car, right? So does Coach have powers to lock the doors too?
You know, Nick, that is an excellent point that I did not think of. That's,
yeah, because he was like, I can't get out. It's like, oh, dude, okay.
It's like that episode of Family Guy with Peter, and he's like yeah. inside the window. It's like, help, I'm locked in the car, help.
No, like, I would have understood if he was stuck, like his seatbelt was stuck, mm-hmm. but... I was just like, okay, you can't get out of the
well, door. Yeah. Once again, these powers, I literally have a note. These powers make no sense. So the Kents are having dinner after this, or I guess it's that same night. It's probably like 9:30 by this point, how long these practices are. And, you know, they have a Jonathan, Martha, and Clark are having a true parent-child conversation about Clark playing football. Of course, Martha's on his side. You know, and it's a sympathetic one. And Jonathan's like, you shouldn't be playing football, son. And, of course, they go back and forth. And Clark says, well, you got to play. And, you know, storms off. And then Jonathan and Martha have a good scene between the two of them talking about the pros and cons of Clark living a normal life, playing football. Jonathan afraid someone's going to find out Clark has powers and take him away. And Martha has a great point and says, look, if we keep treating him this way, no one will have to take him away. He'll just leave all on his own. So, Nick, they go to the Smallville Beanery next. Is that correct?
Yes, the Starbucks of their time.
Is the pre Talon, basically, is what I'm going to call it. Before they opened the Talon later this season, it was the Beanery was the go to place for a few episodes. And Lana is working there. She has found her job because she has quit the cheerleading squad to find her own way. And I love how completely disrespectful people are to Lana. They just laugh it off the fact she's working there. Like, oh, what is this, some kind of charity night? It's like, no, I got a job here. Like,
and she takes it pretty well.
You know, I was impressed.
She's a very nice girl.
She is not perfect at everything, and that's a great thing to have for her because it's so easy to make, oh, she's Lana, she's wonderful, she's good at anything she does. She's screwing up, she's getting orders wrong, she's dropping cups, doing this, doing that.
That scene is actually a really interesting scene because when they walk in, they see her, and the first thing that Clark says is like, hey, where's your necklace? Because I'm not weak. Right now.
Well, they made a point of that too because she'll randomly wear it and sometimes she won't. Like earlier in school when they peer pressure Clark into joining the team, she's not wearing her necklace. Who knows why?
Yeah.
I believe she's wearing her cheerleading outfit though, which is funny because regardless, I don't care what decade a movie or TV show comes out in. If you were a cheerleader and you were in high school and you were at school, you were wearing your cheerleading costume. Like look at a show like Glee, right? They walk around their stupid cheerleading.
It's like all day you wear that? Do you wear any other clothes?
That would be like us wearing our band uniform all day in high school. It makes no sense. But anyway, Lana says, oh, there's a strict dress code, no jewelry. I'm like, okay, good.
Well, yeah, I like that.
They're explaining the reasons when she doesn't have the necklace, which is great.
She walks away like after he gets the order, and Clark finds a way to go talk to her by himself by returning the little tray. I like that little thing.
Smooth move, brother.
It's like, smooth move. Look at that. Look at this guy. But it's so funny because he's obviously flirting with her and she's like not even reacting to it.
Well, but it's her good friend Clark. What's the problem?
Yeah, it's but it's just a funny way to see it. And then her boss gets mad because like these people have been waiting for 5 minutes. I waited 5 minutes, more than 5 minutes last time for my coffee at Starbucks.
Well, the Beanery has higher standards than Starbucks.
Higher standards apparently.
So once Lana drops another cup of coffee or something and the crowd just gives her the whole clap. I'm like, wow,
I'm surprised that Clark didn't do one of those little, I'm really fast, I'll pick up that glass before it hits the floor.
Yeah, he didn't do a Peter Parker or a Barry Allen on that one, did
yeah,
he?
There you go.
So then we go to Luther Mansion, and Lionel has decided to come grace Lex with his presence because he has not obeyed his wishes and right. laid off 20% of his workforce. Now, this is John Glover's first scene with Michael Rosenbaum as Lionel and Lex Luthor, because in the pilot, John Glover was just in the flashback. So he's with the kid Lex just for a couple scenes. So this is his true entrance into the show. And it's just, they're so good from the jump. Their chemistry together is so great. Their dialogue. Like, I feel like when the writers are writing the Luthers, they stepped their game up. Because mm-hmm. they just did such a good job with their back and forth, you know?
Just their dynamic. The way he's like, you know how I feel about you, son. And it's like, they've been going through this issue for X amount of
yeah,
years.
Yeah, you get the history.
Yeah, you get the history.
Like, he reaches to touch him, and Lex kind of, like, flinches away. And yeah. and he gives him the whole, like, you know, the Caesars would send their sons to the far corners of the earth. And you really get where he's coming from with that yeah. megalomaniac mentality about his importance in the world.
The writing itself already builds the whole background, and I loved it.
And then they fence, which is just such a high society thing to do. And Lionel wins because he has a great commentary. Lex gets the whole reading people thing from his father. Lionel says, you're ruled by your emotions, Lex. You always have been. That's your weakness. And it's a good, you know, just analysis of Lex. And it's entirely true. So that's how Lionel defeats him. And he says, I want those workers gone by tomorrow. And then we come back to our football subplot, where an informant from the football team is going to talk to Chloe. His name is Trevor. Now, Trevor is played by David Patkow, who has an interesting, not history, but I guess it's history now, but it wasn't history then. This was his first foray into the Superman world. He would go on to play Detective Dan Turpin in Bulletproof in season 8 of Smallville. So, you know, Dan Turpin, you might know him from the Superman animated series or the comic books, obviously. It's where he originated. So Clark went undercover as a cop with him. And then also, he's in Man of Steel. He's the first person to say Superman and Man of Steel. He's the soldier on the phone in the control center. He's like, they're on their way and they have Superman in tow. And then the guy from the Matrix is like, Superman or whatever. Does he say that? I don't even know. The guy from the Matrix. You know what I'm talking about. General Hardwick, who also played General fill in the blank in the Matrix. Same character. But yeah, he has the distinction of saying Superman in Man of Steel, so good for you.
Good for him. David. He got to say the thing that no one got to say in Smallville. So.
Yeah. Well, the word Superman is said in Smallville a few times, but it's never said in reference to Clark doing what he does.
Yeah, in reference.
Because the WB movie department would not allow that. No, I don't know. There's so many theories and speculation, and when we get down near to the end of the series, we can start talking about all that behind-the-scenes drama. But the coach here, Coach Wald, is basically he's figured out that Trevor here is the snitch. And snitches get stitches, right? So he burns his arm. He's like, oh, my God. And Clark has to go talk to him later on. And it's funny. He's, like, cowering in, like, I guess a garage or something?
Yeah, I wasn't sure where he was. It's like, is this, like, the pool room?
And he has, like, 30 fire extinguishers around him. I'm like, dude, where did you get all these fire extinguishers? Did you steal them? Did you buy them? Like, they're all, like, from different sizes and shapes. It's like he went around the school and collected every single fire extinguisher and is now, like, in the boiler room just hiding from the coach. But
I'm surprised he's not hiding, like, in a pool. He's
yeah. just, like,
it's the safest thing. Where there's just water.
So Chloe's working on, after talking to Trevor, she's working on her, the Tomorrow's Torch, you know, the front page. And I love her headline. It says, playing with fire. Because she's got a picture of Coach Walt doing the pyrotechnic thing on the football field. Uh-huh. I used to love that about newspaper. Picture captions and headlines or just the fun puns or whatever. I love that stuff. So then Coach Walt is on to Chloe. So he shows up with the torch and he sets it on fire. She doesn't see him, but he sets it on fire, and of course Clark runs in and saves her. You know, Allison Mack did her own stunt here when she's like stumbling through the fire.
Oh, really?
With the coat over her head. Yeah.
Oh, that's impressive.
Very impressive. Very dangerous too. Very ill-advised. Yeah. She actually had a quote saying that there's so much hairspray in her hair, she was very worried about being flammable, running through all the flames. And then, you know, when Coach Walt sees, does he sees Clark rescue her, but he doesn't see Clark use his powers. So he does kind of wander off once Clark is there.
And the fire died down. So I guess that's his power too. He can just. Like the power.
You know, that's another good point. I didn't even think about it. Like, he doesn't just start a fire. He can literally control it. Yeah, once again, weakest point in this episode. These vaguely defined powers. It, you know, I guess thinking about other characters in comic books who have fire powers, there's Pyro, which I guess would be the closest example to what Coach Walt has, huh?
Yeah.
Because Pyro can he can he stop fires too? I mean, he can shoot fire like Iceman.
I don't remember if he could stop fires or not. Fires.
And then, of course, there's, you know, people like the Human Torch. Yeah, the comic equivalent of Coach Walt is Pyro, basically. And he's Pyro because he just set the torch on fire. I love that final shot where he walks off, kind of zooms out, and it's his fire exit only.
That was a nice touch.
So they come back the next day, and Clark's trying to make Chloe laugh. He's like, "Hey, the torch. How's that for dramatic irony?" And she's not amused. Although that's exactly something like she would say, right?
But when you think of it, she was about to die. How are you going to make a joke about that?
Hey, you got to lighten the mood somehow, right? I would do the same thing. Oh,
lighten the mood. See, that could have been another joke there.
So we go back to the beanery after this, and Lex is there, like, going through folders and, you know, doing – why he would go to the beanery for this is ridiculous. Like, Lex Luthor, right? He also kind of laughs off the fact that Lana's there. He's like, "Hey, Lana, what did Nell kick you out on the street?" it's like a big joke. This girl is trying to work her first job. She gets no encouragement from any of you people. Actually, I'm defending Lana here in this episode. I never thought I would. But it's just so funny how negative they all are to her. Clark, of course, shows up. Like, what is timing on Smallville is so contrived, right? People walk into rooms and run into each other. It is a small town. That's the only thing.
That's why it's called Smallville. That's
the only excuse. The town is called Smallville. I know someone says that at some point on the show. I know it is. I know they do. I can hear it in my head. I don't know who says it. So Lex and Clark and Lana talk for a little bit about, you know, defying their expectations and their parents and stuff, which kind of ties the whole thing together with their three stories, which is great. There's not like one person's off doing their own thing and doesn't connect to the other ones, because in lesser episodes you have like an A plot and a B plot that has nothing to do with the A plot. But a good story is when all the things naturally dovetail into each other, and that's what happens here. And that's a good scene between the three of them. And you forget that early in the show, you know, there were scenes like this. You know, Clark and Lana, Lex having fun, being friends. There's so much drama that shows up later on. You forget about the simpler time. You know.
Yeah, actually, I'm remembering something now. When I first started watching the show back then, I had an issue with that because I knew Lex was going to ultimately be his nemesis. So I was just like, I don't know how I feel of them being buddy-buddy, because I know that in the future they're supposed to be enemies.
But yeah, but that's the whole point, though, Nick. It kind of inverts your expectations where, you know, Lex, of course, we all know he's going to be Clark's archenemy, but it's not about the destination. It's about the journey, man. Yeah.
Yeah.
And Rosamom is it's a great actor, right? And he plays Lex so layered. You it makes sense, you know? And for a while, they were right on track with, like, you completely being with Lex for every decision he made, you know, and completely understood why he made the choices he made and made him the man he is. Now, they botched that later on in the show. But we'll get that. We'll get there down the road. But I do feel like that's a huge part of Smallville, like that Lex Clark relationship. It's kind of like Professor X and Magneto, right? That's why they're such a compelling hero and villain team, because they were great friends, you know, right. And they want the same things. They just want to go about it in different ways.
That is a good point.
Thank you. That's why I'm the host.
And that's why I'm general audience.
Exactly. But you know, they Clark and Lex, or Superman and Lex Luthor, they want the same things ultimately. But they want to go about it in different ways. Like, Lex, the best interpretations for Lex are truly when he feels like he's doing the right thing to protect the Earth.
Oh, yes.
And those are the best villains, and they feel like they're the hero. But that eventually won you over, right? Lex being Clark's friend.
It eventually won me over. It was one of those tropes that bothered me a little bit, but it won me over because they did it really well.
So we cut to the next day, and it's game day. We see Coach Walt. He's chilling out in the sauna. I guess chilling out would not be the correct terminology for a sauna. but he's relaxing in the sauna before the big game. Clark comes to find him. He's like, "Clark, why aren't you uniform out there on the field?" Like, why isn't he uniform? Like, the game's about to start, man. What are you doing? Clark has gone and talked to Trevor here, so he kind of knows the full story. He says, "Hey, you're not going out on that field." And he's like, "I've been coaching for 25 years or or whatever." He goes on his rant about how he needs his 200th win and his legacy and all that stuff. So lucky for Coach Walt, there's kryptonite in the sauna, as has been established. So the minute that wood door opens, like, what, I guess the door's made out of lead? Because it didn't affect Clark till he walked in there, right? does he hit Clark? Or does he pass out? How does Clark get incapacitated here?
Okay, so I had a problem with it, because first off, he opens the door and he goes, "I'm not going out there. You're not going out there either." And then he gets mad, but then he sees that he's getting weak.
But he doesn't stop. He just still pushes on. It's like, dude, you know you're gonna be not powerful anymore. Why are you gonna still
push?
Yeah,
as he's like collapsing against the
door,
he's
like, find out what's going on. But basically what happens is like, oh, you're not looking so hot there, Clark. And then he punches him and he throws him into the rocks.
Punches, assaults a student. Like, this is his second assault of a student. But, you know, it had been established earlier when Clark was talking to Trevor, like, that Coach Walt had been kind of an abusive coach before, you know, so it wasn't just like the meteor rocks made him crazy or anything, like happens with most of these homicidal maniac kids we meet later on in the show. He kind of had a tendency for this anyway, but man, assaulting a student on school property, it's hardcore, man. And then he locks the sauna door to keep him in there. Why do your sauna have a lock on it? It makes no sense.
So no one could get in it. No one else can
use it. It's his private sauna for 25 years of appreciation. We cut to the game itself. Did you see, this is quick, you might not have seen it, but did you see the people in the stands wearing the crow noses?
Yes, I did.
That's hilarious.
It's like, did we have people wear Viking helmets?
We did. Like, you didn't see that? Went to football games for 4 years. You never saw somebody in a Viking helmet?
I had to pay attention to the game because we had to play whenever there's whenever there was a something. I know, I never noticed.
So Jonathan and Martha show up at the game and they're there to support Clark. And they can't find him. They don't see he's on the field. They ask Chloe where he is. She's like, no, we were supposed to meet up before. What for? You know? I thought that was weird. But he didn't show. Thought he was with you. So Jonathan goes down to the field to go talk to the coach. And he's like, Jonathan, you know parents aren't allowed on the field. just kind of thought that was funny. He's like, have you seen Clark? He's like, I guess he doesn't have what it takes after all. Like, dude, just throwing the kid under the bus. You just beat him up and lock him in your sauna. Come on, Coach Walt. But Coach Walt sees that Jonathan and Chloe are talking, and they go off, and he kind of hands the clipboard over to his assistant coach, and he's like, I'll be right back. It's like, we're in the middle of a game. He's like, just call the damn place! That's a little funny coach moment there. So then Jonathan is just, I guess, looking around the school for Clark. I mean, right. Just,
oh, and Clark was throwing the stones out the window.
Yeah. So that was Clark had the presence of mind to try and break the window, as if that would help. But at least it would draw attention to the fact something's amiss.
That's what I thought, and I also thought, what if he was just trying to get the meteorites out of the room so he can get better?
Yeah, also a good idea. I mean, because as has been established, that door is made out of lead. So if he had gotten the rocks outside the window, it would have been okay. So Jonathan just, fortunately for Clark, Jonathan comes by, sees the meteor rocks come through the window, and then busts the door open. So good on you, Jonathan. And then the coach shows up and starts trying to beat them both up with like a fire hydrant. It's like, come
on. Oh, ironic. Fire hydrant.
Yep, there we go. Fire imagery everywhere. This is our big showdown of the episode. Of course, Clark throws him 20 feet, as he does with everyone and everything.
Well, how fast did he heal? He was just out of the sauna for like 2 seconds. And then he was like, oh, I'm back to full strength.
That's all it takes, man. You saw, they made the point to show you his hand, where it was all ripply.
Yeah,
and then it disappeared. Like, so that was, hey, he's fine now.
He's fine now.
The lead door, Nick. You're forgetting the lead door.
But what about the stones he threw out?
That, you know, now you're just nitpicking now. Like I said, he throws the coach 20 feet because that's what happens. And I love what Clark says. He says, you need help. And the coach says, what I need is to win this game. It's comical, but it's supposed to be over the top because that's how these coaches are. Like, it's, I felt like it was pitch perfect what a crazed football coach would be. So he's setting the whole place on fire, and it's the classic Superman shot of him walking through flames, which is really good. I mean, you see that in every incarnation of Superman, you see him walking
was
through the fire.
Was that CG really good for that time? I'm trying to remember.
Well,
that was supposed to be good CG.
It wasn't CG. It was more blue screen, I think.
Blue screen,
it looked
yes.
like real fire, but a couple of the shots look like, oh, here's Tom Welling walking in front of a blue screen. But some other ones are really good. The pyrotechnics, like, I felt like I was pretty well directed. Despite a couple of dodgy blue screen shots, I felt like this is pretty good. It's television budget, right?
Yeah, it's television. And
Clark has a callback to earlier in the episode because he walks through the fire and Coach is like, how did you do that? He's like, it's in the genes. Clark's pretty clever in this episode. I like that. So we mentioned in our last two episodes where the freak of the week is done in by some kind of accident. And the pilot, the Scarecrow, gets like the car gets stuck between the fire hydrant and a wall. Bug Boy pulls the wrong chain and gets smushed in the factory. And here the coach just like gets really mad and basically commits suicide. Like, accidental?
I wasn't sure exactly, because they don't even talk about it later.
Like, the episode is intentionally vague on it, and I'm pretty sure he killed himself. He burned himself alive, which is, extremely dark.
Yeah, and then the fact that Clark just walks away and he's like the only witness of it, and like no one's questioning what happened. I actually don't know how it was resolved. It's maybe, I don't know.
Well, I doubt they wanted to like delve into the gritty details of the coach burning himself alive on this Superman, young Superman television series.
I thought he just turned into flames, and then that's what he is now. It's just flames.
You know, I had never considered that.
He got so mad that he just disappeared.
I would tell you that's ridiculous, and you're an idiot for suggesting it, but is that not exactly what happened in the previous episode with Bug Boy? Yes, he turned into Fox and he crawled away. So I really cannot fault you for that theory.
I was actually hoping that you were going to say that he shows up later on in another season.
No, he does not.
He doesn't. Okay.
So I think we're just left to assume that he's dead. So awkward. Anyway, and after all that, Nick, they won the game, right? So he got his 200th win after all.
I was just actually, when I heard that, I was like, man, it should have been that he lost. You know, like, don't even give him that 200th win. It's like, come on.
Yeah, they're gonna take down the Coach Walt statue and all that good stuff. So we cut back to Luther Mansion, and Lionel has returned. Lex has been influenced by his friend's rebellious spirit, Clark and Lana, sticking it to the man. He has defied Lionel and is not going to fire the workers. But he's apparently devised a way for them to recoup the same amount of money by not laying them off. So he's not just being an irresponsible business person. He's actually a smart guy who's figured out an alternative. And Lionel's upset about it, and Lex says, I don't know what bothers you more, that I didn't do what you said or that you didn't think of this better way yourself. And I think that's entirely true. A guy like Lionel, he wants his son to be better than him, but he also doesn't want his son to do better than him. You know what I mean? Like these kind of personalities, the megalomaniacs, like they feel threatened by their children as well. And Lionel's reaction to all this is great. He's like, you get one. Lex's like, what? One chance to defy me. I just thought that was very ominous. And Lex has a line here that's usually reserved for Clark. He says, you have no idea what I'm capable of.
The way that Lex says it, though, it gave me the whole little notion. It's like, oh, we know exactly what he's capable of, mm-hmm. as in knowing what he does, like in the comics. So I actually thought that was a really good line for Lex himself.
Absolutely. I felt like it's a lot more effective here than it is for Clark when he uses it, because it's like, aha, he has superpowers and they don't know. It's funny. Or, you know, it works a lot better for Lex. I 100% agree with you.
Yeah.
So then we get our last scene with Clark and Lana, and they're out. Lana's just hanging out on the football field, you know, because small town contrivance. Turns out the beanery has let her go. So she's been fired. Maybe if her friends were a little more encouraging,
yeah,
she might have done a better job. Poor girl.
Right. So. She totally got Lex's order incorrect. Like, I don't even know what Lex drank.
That's right. Clark's like, is that what you ordered? And Lex's like, not even close. encouragement goes a long way. So blame your friends and family. Did Whitney even come visit her when she was working there? Probably not.
I don't think so. Yeah, I forgot to mention that earlier, though. Clark is going to be part of the team of the people who tied him to made him a scarecrow. I was like, where did all that it's okay, that was a couple of weeks ago, a couple of days ago, where they dragged me out to a field and made fun of me, but you know what? I'm gonna join the team anyways. I was like, okay, good for you.
Well, and that's kind of what Clark and Lana talk about here. She asked him, hey, are you gonna play football next year? And he's like, yeah, I got out on the field and I realized my reason for playing wasn't there anymore. And of course he's talking about her. She doesn't realize this, of course, because she's a girl. you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that ties up Clark playing football. Like, I felt like they addressed it. We're three episodes in, and it's already been addressed. Like, it was a conversation piece in the pilot, and it was actually here. Like, he joined the football team, and that all happened. You know, it was done, and we moved on from that. And I liked how Smallville handled it. This interpretation, like, this is the direction they chose to go with it. Other interpretations in the comic books have him playing football, etc. But this one didn't, and that's fine. But then when they went back to it in season four, I was like, ugh. They clearly just ran out of ideas of stuff to do. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, what if we put Clark on the football team? It just kind of undercut everything they did here.
That ending, though, I was really hoping that Don't You Forget About Me started playing because we're on the football field. Don't you forget.
This particular song, I don't even remember. Was there a song? Because they just scream.
No, there was a song building up. So actually, the whole episode, the music was on point. They opened with Gorillaz.
Oh, yeah. It was Clint Eastwood, right?
Yeah, Clint Eastwood. I was like, what? I was thinking to myself, how long ago was this?
Sunshine. In a bag, I feel useless. That's the, no, it was that's really the song good. We'll bump out on, because that's my favorite song of the episode. Yes. Because this episode ended like on dialogue, it didn't really have the song as much as the last two. You know, those were like emotional moments. This was just... you could tell they were having fun too, like, yeah. You know, it was nice to, once again, nice to look back and see these characters just at a younger and more innocent age.
Yeah, and like the whole situation there, it's nighttime, they're walking on the football field. It was like a Harry meets Sally moment where they're just friends just hanging out, but you know, they want a little bit more, but I don't know.
One of them does. But you know, we should point out the reason they're screaming is they've had a frustrating week and they just want to just get it all out, you know. And they scream up to the sky, and that's the end of the episode. So
yeah, and she brought that up while she was at the cafe, where she was like, I just want to scream. I liked how they kept up with that.
So, Nick, have you had a frustrating week?
No, I haven't had a
frustrating week. Well, let's just assume that you have.
It will be.
Let's just assume that we have, and we need to get our stress out. So, okay. Ready on three, we're going to scream, all right?
Okay.
One, two, three.
You two have inspired me. Oh, yeah. Joining the football team and pouring some coffee. We're a couple of real rebels.
Long live the revolution. How is it?
It's perfect. Is that what you ordered? Not even close.
So that was Hothead. IMDb gives Hothead a 7.6. on their out of 10 scale, which seems about fair, and the Superman homepage gave it a 4 out of 5. So, you know, a little less than the previous two episodes. I would agree with that. As I had mentioned earlier in the podcast, knowing this episode was coming up, I was thinking to myself, oh, the one with the pyrotechnic football coach. But when you watch it, everything works together very well. The themes of, you know, Clark and Jonathan having their back and forth about playing football or not, Lex and Lionel, where, you know, Lex defies him and does his own plan for the Luthicorp plant. You have Lana trying to find her own identity, quitting the cheerleading team because, you know, she said her mom was a cheerleader and her whole family been cheerleaders, you know, and it was just something that was expected of her. So there was a lot of themes there, like undercurrent of the whole episode, that really tied together and made for a strong story. So, Nick, what would you rate this episode if you had to give it a rating?
If I gave this episode a rating, I was leaning toward a B+ or A-, but I want to give it an A-. I really enjoy the storyline for it. Just as you said, if I had looked back on it and I tried to remember it, I was like, I probably would have given about a B or B+, but then actually rewatching the episode and seeing the little, how everything works together, how everything's set up, like the backstories for every single character, I thoroughly enjoyed it.
I'm right around there with you. I'd give this a B+. I feel like I should reserve A for, like, better episodes, but and I gave the pilot a B+, so I feel like, well, I don't think I should rate this better than the pilot, because I feel like the pilot wasn't really true. A really strong episode. So
right.
I'm just trying to keep it all in perspective here, because we got over 200 episodes coming. I can't give everything.
That's very true.
Like, I feel like on some level, I could probably give almost every episode an A- if I really wanted to. I'm like, well, I really enjoyed it, but so I got to go with the B+. If the main thing for me is the freak of the week, just this is it's absurdity. Like the power set, it doesn't make any sense, you know, and that's a huge weakness. Because like I said, the last episode, Metamorphosis, I feel like it all made sense. Mm-hmm. It all tied together. The whole bug angle worked very well. Of course, the Hothead thing, what they're doing here, it seems to me, at least in the early episodes, is they're taking whatever characteristic the person has before they're infected or affected by the Meteorox, and like it accentuates that, you know, and we'll see that moving forward in other episodes. I don't know, man, like the pseudoscience, I'm not buying it, right? Even for a sci-fi fantasy adventure show, you gotta have some semblance of make sense. There was no particle accelerator explosion in Smallville, you know. That's just magic. That's like a big magic bomb on the Flash, right? Central City. So with the Meteorox, I feel like you need some kind of physical catalyst or something like that. That was not present here. And then, like you said, the illy defined powers. Can he turn the fire off? Does he have real telekinesis? Did he lock the doors of the car? Like, too many questions there. And then kind of vague ending too. Like, well, did he kill himself? That's pretty dark. Like, if he did, we should have a little more time with that, you know? So I'm gonna give it a B+. We have a new category to keep track of: Smallville High School faculty deaths. And that number is now at 1 with Coach Walt. Mm-hmm. So we'll continue to keep a running tally of how many Smallville High School faculty staff members lose their life over the course of the show. Depressing, but worth taking note of. I want to thank Nick once again for being my guest this episode. Nick, if people want to find you online, where can they find you?
All right, so I just recently reopened my Twitter, so it's at Nick Ryan. That's N-I-C-K-R-Y-A-N. And I am actually a very big user of Instagram, as Zach mentioned in the last episode. Mine is nickryan.jpg, like JPEG. So nickryan.jpg on Instagram.
Why not GIF or bitmap? Why
or,
JPEG?
Or GIF. I picked JPEG because those
NickRyan.BMP.
Because no one these days will know what a BMP is. Everyone knows what a JPEG is.
Is it GIF or GIF?
Oh, man. Are we going to have this conversation?
We are. I don't...
I say GIF because that is what the creator calls it. So I'm going to go with GIF.
And who is the creator?
I don't remember his name, but that's what he says it's called. I'm going to call it GIF.
So George Lucas is the creator of Star Wars, and he refers to Hoth, Count Dooku, Gungans, and laser swords. So I don't know if we can really trust the creators of things and their pronunciation.
But he probably feels really bad when people don't use his words, though, right? I'm being respectful to the person who made the word. Right,
so nickryan.psd, is it?
On Instagram? No. nickryan.jpg.
Cool, man. You know, I wanted Zach Ryan as my name, because Ryan is my middle name.
Oh, really?
I would say as well, but Nick Ryan is actually your first name in completion. Yeah. So no dashes or anything. So it's a cultural thing, right?
Yeah, it's a cultural thing.
And culturally, when we say culturally, you are?
I am Filipino.
There we go. So I wanted Zachary Ryan to be Twitter, right? Because I had the cadence all figured out. I was like, at Z-A-C-H-A-R-Y-R-Y-A-N. Like, it kind of rolls off the tongue, right? There's some guy out there with Zachary Ryan, and it's taken. I tweeted at him. I was like, hey, do you use Twitter? Like, he's got the egg as his picture. He has, like, 8 tweets from, like, 6 years ago. Like, hey, man, can I have this? And it wasn't to be. So I've been through many iterations of my Twitter name, but Moron Zach is here to stay. At Moron Zach. M-O-O-R-E-O-N. Z-A-C-H. I didn't realize how funny it would sound when you say it out loud, but it's like, for more on Zach, go here. Yeah. So that's me personally. If you want to find the show, we are at Always Mallville, that's 1S, on Twitter because of the character limit. So we've taken that in stride and we've carried it over to all of our other social media outlets. On Facebook, we are Always Sold on the Smallville, but if you do facebook.com/alwaysmallville, once again 1S, and then on Gmail we are at alwaysmallville@gmail.com. so send us an email, let us know what you think, things like that. If you know anyone that might like this show, please share it. We are a new show building our audience, so please spread the word. And you know, that's pretty much all I have to say. Nick, any final words?
I'm excited to see where this goes. I enjoy this. Thank you for having me on, and keep on listening.
Absolutely. So we'll be back next week with my friend Mike Krause. We're going to talk about X-Ray, the episode where Clark gets his X-Ray vision, one of my favorite episodes. And Nick will be back in a few episodes, and we'll keep on holding on to Smallville. Hey, it happened. I'm feeling glad I got sunshine in a bag. I'm useless.